Welcome to the Critical Few Actions to Improve Your Business podcast. I'm John Downes, and I'm here to help you cut through the overwhelm and prioritize what matters most to improve your business. Let's get started and discover the critical few actions that have the biggest impact. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Mark Cameron, who I believe is one of Australia's foremost experts on artificial intelligence. I've known Mark for over 15 years, and he's helped a number of my successful CEOs with their businesses. Mark has been an enthusiastic, and some would say obsessive, adopter of AI since before the days of GPT, implementing AI and robotic process automations, AI agents, etc., for his large government, healthcare, and university clients, as well as medium businesses to improve their business processes, create strategic competitive advantage, and improve profitability. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here, John.
Well, it's great to have a chat. So today we're going to talk about how medium business founders and CEOs can use AI to improve their business efficiency and profitability. But first, tell me a little bit about your AI journey.
Okay, so my AI journey has been going on for a very long time. I mean, probably, so from a theory and strategy perspective, I was talking about predictive analytics and the growth of data and what that was going to mean for businesses and the way that they interact with their customers and how they create value a very long time ago. So as social media was starting to evolve, you know, way back in the days before the global financial crisis. And even though I wasn't calling it generative AI at those time, I was very much, those terms of predictive analytics and artificial intelligence and so on were definitely terms that I was using back in those days. And I remember actually doing some work in the US probably about 14, 15 years ago now, where I actually wrote a paper, and that paper was really talking about an age where data was going to be everywhere, that predictive analytics was going to be increasingly cheaper, that the pace of compute was going to sort of keep up to where we are now. And we were going to be entering into a world with digital assistants or digital agents that were going to be able to do a lot of things for us. And it was probably a little bit ahead of its time at that point, because I remember having a few people turn around and look at me sort of with slightly confused looks. But it's nice to know that a couple of them have reached back out in years and sort of recently and said, I finally get what you mean.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things, Mark, that I've enjoyed about our conversations over the last decade and a half is that, you know, you really are a thought leader in this space.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really love kind of understanding this and understanding how it impacts, so how technology impacts society, how it impacts businesses, how it changes the nature of work. It's been something I've been thinking about and writing about for many, many years. It's, as I think you know, I mean, I was digital strategy economist for BRW for about 6 years and wrote for Forbes and lots of other organizations. So that journey of writing and thinking about how to frame up technology in new and interesting ways has been part of who I've been for a very long time. Mm. And sort of take that thinking and that way of simplifying complex ideas into the way that I work with customers these days.
Yeah, and I don't think there's been too many weeks gone by where I haven't seen in the last 24 months you completing yet another certificate learning exercise on LinkedIn and elsewhere on artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I think I'm at, when it comes to generative AI, I think I'm up to about 120 of them at the moment. So, yeah, I think your term obsessively adopting is probably a good one.
Yeah, I'm glad you got that in before I did. And so in the context of medium businesses, what is AI?
Look, I mean, AI sort of means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Obviously, you've got artificial intelligence as a technology category. But there's also lots of other technology categories that before ChatGPT, we called things like predictive analytics. They were called, you know, machine learning, you know, sort of neural networks. There was all these sort of technology terms, you know, big data and, you know, all these different terms that have really collapsed down into one term, which is called AI now. And the reason for that is much like when Google brought out search and there was all this, you know, really complex, this hugely complex environment around search, which was really sort of the domain of the technical expert. And then Google sort of, you know, took it down to one simple interface, which was essentially the search bar. that's what ChatGPT has done for AI. It's just given this really, really complex landscape of very, very technical and powerful tools, and they've collapsed it down to a very, very simple interface that anybody can access. For most businesses, what that means is, for most medium businesses anyways, what that means is there is the ability to access this information and this technology in a way that they've never been able to do before, and without having to spend a lot of money on technical, like large consulting engagements or huge amounts of technical capability, are able to get a lot of value very, very quickly.
And I guess part of that is, Mark, my feeds are being swamped at the moment by posts telling me how I can create 100 days of social media content in 20 minutes, knowing 2 minutes, yeah, and that I can replace all of my staff with AI agents. So let's put the bullshit aside. You've been doing this in the real world for at least the last 5 years. What do you see are the top three areas that AI can be used by medium business founders and leaders to improve their business?
Well, in order to explain that, I think we've probably got to talk about it in two different ways.
Yeah.
So I think before ChatGPT and generative AI, there was a lot of AI that was being used by businesses, and it was in the category of automation. So process automation, robotic process automation, et cetera. And that's reasonably simple workflows, but access to data, rules-based. So, so processes that are rules-based, and you can automate a lot of that and add a lot of technology to that and get huge efficiency gains from that. And businesses can do that still. So things like accounts payable, so a lot of those processes where there's lots of documents or lots of information that needs to be processed or imported into systems or moved between systems, automation can do that in an incredibly powerful way. And the current form of AI is able to do that very, very well, and in many cases, much better than the previous versions of process automation were able to do. But what I would say is that area is very, very powerful, but it's also kind of a scarcity mindset. It's right, where organizations are, where people are going, we need to do the same thing that we've always done, but faster and cheaper. A lot of organizations now are moving more into the growth mindset. So if they're saying, well, AI is going to unlock trillions of dollars of new value in the global economy, and maybe doing the same stuff that we've always been doing but faster and cheaper is not the way to capture some of that value, maybe we need to look at new ways of doing things. And AI gives us the ability to look at our business model, and our sector in new ways, and think about it from a new angle and capture new value. So two different ways of thinking about it. One's obviously the harder one, but the short-term versions, you can save money very, very quickly. You can get productivity improvements. Medium businesses on average, if they've got mostly knowledge workers, can expect to get 30 to 40% productivity improvement with a really well-structured AI strategy.
Yeah.
But then if you start moving into that next phase of the growth mindset phase, there is potentially unlimited value to be accessed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, that's interesting. And I guess you're talking about not only a level of sophistication, but a maturity model. I'm still speaking to founders and CEOs, pretty much the ones that I'm meeting now, most of the ones that I speak to about how much are they using AI, how often do they personally use AI?
Yep.
I'm still getting somewhat quizzical looks. The clients that I've been working with over the last 18 months, if they're not using it daily and they're not looking at opportunities to implement it in their business, then I've already failed. And that's not the case. So, I guess we're sort of seeing a crawl, walk, run sort of model. So let's talk about that from the perspective of, okay, well, if we think about that crawl, walk, run model, how do business leaders get into and get their organizations into AI in a tiptoe way? Then how are they getting early solid wins, as you were describing in the former case, where they're doing things better, faster, cheaper? And then how are they doing with the transformation of their business model, or at least just challenging, should we be doing this stuff at all? Can you take us through a couple of case examples that demonstrate each of those three phases of maturity? Would that work?
Yeah, for sure. So in the initial phases, And these are all interconnected in many ways. So I think an organization that, you know, wants to, most organizations want to sort of capture that short-term value and be able to get those productivity improvements really quickly. Often the best way to do that is through the training and uplift of your people. So the shortest path to value quite often for organizations is how do we help our people become, move up that maturity curve themselves? So if you've got a lot of, particularly if you've got knowledge workers inside the organization, well, you know, so office workers, being able to help them become more comfortable with the tools, you give them a good solid policy and framework to be able to work around, you help them adopt the tools and then work up a training sort of model. They don't have to be amazing, but you'll see very, very quickly that's where the 20, 30% productivity improvement is able to happen. So for example, you know, like organizations that have to respond to a lot of tenders, for example, or you know, those kinds of processes, things that may have taken days will be shrunk down to hours fundamentally. So those are, and processes that may have taken 2 or 3 people could be done by one person now. Yeah. So you'll see really big productivity gains off the back of that. And that's the starting point.
So, you know, when I'm still, and it amazes me, but that's because I'm deep in it now. You know, I'm still speaking to business people and saying, you know, how much are you using AI and how are you using it and what's innovative for you? And I'm still coming across people, and it continues to surprise me, although it irritates me, still coming across people saying, well, you know, all your information gets shared with the world, you know, yep, it's not really secure. And I sort of say, well, hang on a tick, what you're really demonstrating here is you don't know diddly squat. And so if we take a leader of an organization that's at base zero, how do we encourage them even to get started and take those first baby steps? Because I, you know, for them to do that, there's still a ways from trying to figure out how to actually write a tender faster, better, cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. But the easiest starting point is just do it, you know, a very short, sharp current state assessment. So, you know, process what we work with the leaders, so to help them identify areas of their issues with inside the business, processes that can be improvement, areas where they can see that there is maybe productivity issues, and then help them sort of articulate what a more automated workplace could look like. Right. Then run a survey across the rest of the organization where we're looking at AI aptitude, attitude, and mindset.
Oh yeah.
And then what that does is provide feedback to the leaders and say, here's where, you know, some of your people are excited. Here's where some people are interested. Here's where some people are worried. And if we were to design a training and change program for your organization to get the most out of these tools, this is what it would look like. And very, very quickly, you can move that organization from being, you know, sort of disorganized to a very coherent and unified approach to the way that they're adopting AI and starting to experiment and find those use cases internally that are going to start to have the big impact. And I think the reason why I sort of tend to focus on that first and foremost is the data out of Harvard and MIT recently has shown that the organizations that prepare their workforce to be able to adopt AI at scale, rather than the way that technology has been bought previously, which is buy a technology piece and push it down. But if they help the organization broadly get prepared to adopt it, they end up getting far greater return on investment because the use cases start getting identified within the business. So you get top down and bottom up. And of course, the people, the bottom up ones, are the people who are actually doing the processes, can actually see the areas where things need to be improved. And as they start to understand how AI works, they're the ones who actually start to innovate and drive the change themselves.
Absolutely. Okay. So yeah, let's go through a couple of case examples in that context.
Yeah, sure. So I've got, I mean, there's quite a few. I mean, there's lots and lots of case studies out in the world, but the ones that I'm sort of working on at the moment, there's a manufacturing company, really, really interesting manufacturing company. And they, yeah, got me in to look at their sort of AI strategy broadly. What, as we've been working on that piece, you know, that strategy, we've sort of identified lots of different areas of the business that can be improved. So customer experience, knowledge management, so the way that people inside the organization access knowledge, which means that new hires will be, you know, be able to be effective far more quickly and customers are going to be able to be serviced far more rapidly, and that means that the chances of losing orders, drops significantly, and so on. What has ended up happening is they're starting to identify the fact that there are lots of other competitive issues at play, and maybe, and what we're sort of working on is actually how do we sort of use this process of investing in technology to slightly shift the orientation of their business. So their manufacturing business, they're by default quite product focused, and what they need to do is capture market share and gain and protect their market share. So using this process to be able to start to focus much more on customer experience and bringing customer-centric thinking into the organization. Again, it's and the reason I use that as an example is, AI is a very, very powerful tool. Wherever you point that gun is where you're going to start running, and you're going to run really, really fast because that's what it does. And it's always really helpful to think about, is this process or is this direction that we're going to point the gun really where we need to go? And in some cases, maybe it's all you're doing is making the wrong process go faster, which may not be producing. So, it can really, I mean, this is the thing, exploring AI broadly and how it could impact your organization can really help, can really sort of allow the organization to lean into those harder questions that they may have been putting off for a while. Not always, so quite often, there's just things that can be done. Like I said, you can pick off parts of the business and get dramatic improvements, but often those questions do come up. But with another organization working with in the travel space, they do a lot of communication, a lot of marketing, a lot of that kind of search engine optimization, all that kind of stuff. And for them, it's been like adding 40% more staff to the organization without actually having to make the hire for
How
that
so?
organization. Well, because we've gone through and looked at all the different tasks that are happening internally, so and how they're structured, and realizing that if we actually augment a lot of those tasks with AI, and we sort of get really clear about which processes are better off being done by an automated AI sort of technology way, which processes are best being done by humans, and then which processes are best being a combination between the two, what ends up happening is we find massive, massive improvements that that business can make. So, for example, doing search engine optimization analysis, strategy, and execution, sort of something that was taking them months before, now that process can be done in days. Doing social media marketing before, it would be quite a process of, working out what they need to do, working with their internal design team to be able to get a couple of variations. Those variations would be put on the put on social media and with some advertising dollars and tested. So A/B tested and the best one wins. Now, in a process that takes quarter the time, they can get 40 variations, and they're basically running those at all times. So it kind of becomes like a Darwinistic approach to marketing, where just the best one's winning all the time. So it just gets better and better and better and better. So their ability to be able to get very high quality marketing outcomes, as well as much better data for their market, has gone up exponentially.
And coming back to that manufacturing example, what were some of the early wins at that sort of very tactical level that you were starting to see?
So with a lot of organizations where they're just starting on the journey, the early wins are usually quite similar. So sales and marketing is usually one area. So, most organizations have a CRM. Most organizations have salespeople. Most of the salespeople hate using the CRM. So, and the reason they hate using the CRM is because, in many cases, apart from filling in the form saying, I met with this customer and click, 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 and many to get the nuanced information, you're asking the sales guy to essentially be a creative writer. Go, tell us what happened in the meeting and, try and remember everything. And it's just not how they're wired. So, finding a way, so using AI tools so they can essentially just have a conversation with a tool. So it says, tell us what happened in that meeting, who are you meeting? And it runs through and asks them the question, and they can just talk. It then translates and then automatically puts all of that stuff into the CRM. The quality of data goes up really, really, really quickly. And then as a result, there becomes a cultural shift where all of a sudden the sales guys almost start competing with each other to have, you know, who's entering the most information, you know, as opposed to
who's entering the least. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's that one happens often. The other one is around knowledge management. So how does the organization access information internally? So, you know, old reports, tenders, proposals, you know, any document that's been created, and particularly if there's some technical documents, often, you know, businesses have been running for a while, have, you know, a vast, vast library of all that information. Yeah. And it's quite hard to navigate. And, you know, usually you've got a couple of key person risks. So you've got, you know, Jeff over there, he knows everything about that thing. So if you've got any question, give him a call, he'll know where all those files are. If Jeff gets hit by a bus, we're all buggered. And then you've got new people coming into the organization who, you know, they go through an onboarding process, but then after that they kind of feel a bit embarrassed to ask questions. And so that time to value of a new hire becoming really getting up to speed and adding value can sometimes be, you know, like 6 or 7 months, for example.
Oh, that's true.
So having really good knowledge management is a good way to mitigate those risks and those issues. And there have been obviously knowledge management tools around for a long time, but they required even a bit of knowledge to be able to navigate them. So, you know, you'd have to understand the jargon, the nuances, probably some of the structure. You'd have to maybe understand some of the product names, all of those kinds of things. Yeah. Whereas now with a chat interface, you can just ask it a question and it's able to find that immediately for you and bring it up to you and help you use it really, really quickly. So, you know, that time to value or that ability to be able to get information and use it in the way that it's needed right then can just go down to seconds fundamentally.
Yeah. And I know that, you know, with one of my chemical clients, one of the things that they've been doing is using GPT as a tool for helping them with their process documentation. You know, if you go into any business that's under 100 million and talk to them about their processes, quite often they'll talk to you about them with intricate detail. If you ask to actually see an SOP, you'll get a slightly embarrassed look, or you'll be told about something that was written 7 years ago and it's not what we really follow now. But with having GPT as the accelerator or the catalyst to be able to actually have basically a live conversation, get it to draw on the vast expertise of the web to come up with SOPs for handling flammable liquids in a confined space in process chemistry reactions at scale, you know, being able to pull together materials handling procedures or safe work procedures, you know, is a hell of a lot faster because it'll get you there 80% of the way, and then you can actually add to it very quickly and customize it to make it real and context sensitive. You know, that's completely transformed the way they document their organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. There's, you know, really good ways of doing SOPs, as you say, and getting it to do business analysis more broadly. And then you can also, I think you and I spoke about this a while ago, but there's an AI model called Tree of Thought, where you can get it to act as several different experts in a particular topic, and they all debate each other. And yes. So you end up with like not only a document to meet your needs, but it's almost being peer reviewed. So it's been looked at by lots of different angles.
Yeah, it's actually fascinating to watch it do that.
Yeah,
because it's almost like there's a live conversation and tribal council determines who wins at the end.
Yeah,
but it is a great way to actually get different perspectives on the same question. And instantly.
Absolutely, and I think for services businesses, so what I've found for services businesses, some of the things that they do, it's more the nuanced changes that they can do that actually have the biggest impact. So for example, with one organization, it's working with them to be able to build out prompts that act as different types of customers. So before they go in and have a meeting or they're doing a pitch, it can then, you know, they can upload a proposal or whatever, and it acts as different types of customers, and it'll grill them and, you know, challenge them really, really quick. You know, so it can be a conversation, but what it's doing is preparing them for that meeting in ways they haven't been able to do, or understand, you know, like they're going in for it to meet with a client. I did this myself a little while ago. I was meeting with a client and I got the AI tool to spend half an hour talking to me about that client's, as it was a multinational client, so it was quite well documented, but their culture and their ways of working and understanding how that came to be and so on. So by the time I sat down and talked to them and was working through the program with them, I understood that language and that way of working in a way that, they were sort of surprised about, because normally it takes people quite a while to sort of get up to speed. So that kind of stuff I think is really interesting as well, and using it in those ways.
I mean, that's actually a really interesting use case because, good sales practice is that if you're preparing for presentations or you're putting in a proposal or a tender and you've then got to go and do a pitch, then obviously one of the best things to do is to actually rehearse and practice. And often that's sort of done in the Uber on the way to the pitch or in the 90 seconds before you hit connect on Zoom, whichever works best for you. But because of the ease of being able to access AI now, being able to actually have that conversation, I love the fact that it's called conversational AI as well as generative AI, means that you can actually have that conversation and safely interrogate it, and not even your peers realize what a deal you are. And there's a whole bunch of reasons why everybody knows that rehearsing for a presentation is actually leads to great performance. And it re is remarkable that 99% of people don't rehearse before they go into a presentation, and it's train on the day, which is always a recipe for innovation and fly.
Definitely. It's a it's a
Or
it's
a
a high
surprise.
risk approach. Yeah.
Yeah, I call that courageous. People who know me know that that's another word I use for stupid. Okay, so that sort of gets us to our tier one users. I mean, you talked about, data analysis and its ability to analyze data. I was just having lunch with a client, and we were talking about how they have a manufacturing process that deals with liquids, and when they repeat that process 50 times over the course of 2 or 3 years, and they've got all the data to prove it, sometimes the liquid that comes out is beautiful and clear, looks like white wine, and sometimes it's cloudy and looks like apple juice. Both work pretty well. They both achieve the same outcome, but they don't meet the clarity test that their client expects. And on any given day, you can actually ask them, so why is it cloudy today? And the answer will be,
Not sure.
don't know, because we've run this thing a lot of times, and we test the temperature and the pressure and the filtration and the additives and all that sort of stuff using our QA processes. But as we were talking about it, they were sort of saying, well, we've now got 50 sets of data for each of these things, and it's only $20,000 to run one of these processes. We can probably now feed this data into AI for some data analytics and get it to do an analysis that we would not thought of.
Absolutely. That's 100% true. Yeah. I mean, that you can, and particularly if you use models that are more inclined for data analysis, or you tell them to act as a data scientist, it'll find things that, and ask questions you won't even think of, that's for sure. And the great thing about, so that's what I was saying before about thinking about the difference between automation versus AI. So, automation, the way it was and the way we think about it, is automating a process, versus AI, which is essentially adaptive, and it can have a lot of automation in it and process efficiency. But for that example, it's a really good one where it kind of needs to learn and understand over time, and understand what data's missing, what variables it may not be seeing, and start to learn and try and work out what's going on. And that's where these kinds of models can be incredibly, incredibly powerful. As you say, it can do all the analysis on that data. But if you keep it running, it'll continue to improve and continue to learn and continue to make that process better, rather than just locking it in and automating it.
Okay, interesting. So we've largely spoken about do it better, faster, cheaper of the stuff we currently do. Let's jump forward perhaps into a case study of someone who's now taking it to the next level of maturity.
That's really good. So there's some of the best case studies around this, and there's a lot to be thought about with this, around how to even think about the strategy and the governance of this. Is so one of the best case studies, I think, is, and I'll use this one because it's a bigger, it's an interesting one, but this is being replicated at all size businesses everywhere. It's much more to do with the way that it's being approached. So the Mayo Clinic in the US has done a really incredible job of their AI adoption. They spent, rather than going really heavy on governance and writing about risk and then buying lots of technology, what they actually did is go quite light on governance, considering there's some really good governance principles and guardrails, but not overly governed. So they didn't, they didn't do lots and lots of subcommittees and lots of risk committees and so on. And then they spent a lot of time with staff enablement, training, and uplift. And then they had the, this is one of those organizations that had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bottom-up use cases. The last measurement was close to 40% productivity improvement across the board, which is enormous for an organization of that size. But not only that, they found hundreds of millions of dollars of new revenue because they were using these tools to identify ways. I mean, first of all, some of their products were had AI baked into them, but they were taking new products out to market off the back of the way they were using these tools. Now that's a case study. Even though it's a big organization, what it's doing is it's showing an approach, I think, that's really important. And that approach, I'm working with several companies right now following the exact same model, which is, and even though they're smaller companies, I mean Mayo Clinic's, tens of thousands of people, but with organizations, that are much smaller, it's exactly the same approach, which is rather than getting caught up in all the idea of the risk and what it could be, and here are all the problems and we don't believe it, it's actually just let's get put a wrapper around all the things that could go wrong and just be really careful about how we manage those. Let's not over focus on those, and let's not start moving into everything that could go right. And how do we set your organization up to capture that value as quickly as possible? And that's where the training the people, right? Really well thought through change management process, smart investment into technology, and enabling people to be able to, as they identify use cases, work out really quickly how to prioritize them and invest in them, and how they're going to scale throughout the business. That work of making of enabling that, it's sort of the, it's the it just I'd say go slow to go fast, but it's not slow, it's a fast process. But what it means is the pace at which return on investment happens starts going up really, really, really quickly. And it's just a yeah, as I said, I love that case study because that mindset, I think, is the one that in general gets the biggest return on investment.
So it's a really you're bubbling up not just a series of ideas. Funny how old processes don't change, they just get renewed. So instead of having an ideas box, now what you've actually got is a series of use cases where people have either used the AI to actually do something themselves, or they can conceive and perceive how exactly it could be done by connecting different systems or interacting differently with the employees or the customers or the service providers of an organization.
And what it means is the organization starts to have early on, they start to have the challenging discussions. So there's a term that I like to use a bit, which is used just purely to raise eyebrows and get people thinking in a different way, which is, how does your organization look when your carbon-based workforce, which is your people, is outnumbered by your silicon-based workforce 3 to 1, which is what is going to happen with AI agents? How does that change your structure? What does that change from a leadership standpoint? How does that change the way that your business operates? So those questions, even though you don't have to answer them all, it's good to be able to be thinking about them and realizing that as you're investing in AI and moving up that maturity curve, you'll then increasingly start to want to have sort of autonomous processes, which are AI agents, and those processes and those agents will work with people, and all of a sudden that's going to change the nature of the way that your business operates. So you'll have an AI-enabled workplace and workforce.
Are you looking to pinpoint the areas that will make the biggest impact on your business? Check out the Organization Performance and Value Diagnostic. This powerful tool lets you evaluate your business on multiple facets and provides email reminders to keep you on track. Head over to criticalfewactions.com.au and get started now. Okay, so tell me a bit more about AI agents. So obviously, most people are very familiar with the concept of AI, which is really a GPT or Claude or Gemini or Copilot, as just being a replacement for Google search. on steroids, and you can ask it to do intelligent things and it will come back with answers either surprisingly quickly or just answers that surprise you. But now we start to introduce the concept of AI agents. So tell me a bit more about what that is and how it's applied in, say, a medium business.
So, as you say, so ChatGPT is essentially, it's a tool where the human is there sort of asking it to do stuff on your behalf. Yeah. So give me answers about this. And then it can be a conversation. So you're going backwards and forwards. And it's kind of like dealing with an intern, really, or a smart junior. They've got lots of knowledge, but don't really know what to do. And they need instruction. And that's kind of where we're AI agents going to be increasingly autonomous. And they're going to have a role to play. Now, some agents may be sort of human in the loop agents where it will run through and do a bunch of, say, data analytics, pulling together insights, and then asking a human to say, okay, this is what I think. Do you agree? Yep. And the human will either say yes, no, or give it some feedback, and then it will continue on with a process. Or it'll be an agent that just has no human interaction whatsoever. And so it will be able to go away and do things on your behalf as a consumer or as a person within, say, the business, or on behalf of the business itself, and only just report back once processes are finished, fundamentally.
Yeah.
Now, at a consumer level, what that could look like, the one that people like to think about all the time, because it's a part of the market that we all don't like, which is travel, for example. So, rather than booking, if you got to travel to another state, for example, rather than booking the airline, then booking the hotel, then booking the Ubers and doing that, you just say to the agent, I need to go to Sydney on this date. And all of that stuff just happens in the background and it just organizes everything for you. If there's a change, it'll rebook everything and make sure that it's just keeping up with your schedule. Now, that same concept probably happened over many, many, many different market categories. And we'll see that, that'll be the battleground from a commercial standpoint for the big technologies, so the Googles and the Apples and so on. But at a business level, so medium business level, agents are going to be able to do things that you might have engaged and it's somebody outsourcing to do, or a part-timer to do. So, yeah. Bookkeeping, some of the bookkeeping stuff, data, as I said, some analysis work, some reporting work, coming in and doing, as you said before, building out standard operating procedures, for example. Agents will be able to do that work for you in your organization, standardize things, speed it up, reduce costs, and then help you find ways of becoming much, much more efficient.
Mm. And I guess one of the, fairly basic, but also somewhat obvious examples of that is web chatbots now. That are basically sitting on a lot of people's websites, which 24/7 anybody could go into it and say, okay, tell me all about your CEO masterclass service. What's the curriculum? How long does it take? What am I going to look like before I start? What am I going to look like at the end? What sort of diagnostic tools do you have? How do I engage with those? And they can self-serve comprehensively information in a conversational style that they wouldn't be able to get by just searching through a website.
100%. I mean, I'm a director and invested in a business which has built a number of AI agents, and one of them is in the psychological space, but for businesses that have issues with psychological health. So they might have been going through significant change, or they've got a remote workforce or diverse workforce that can go through periods of vulnerability. We've built an agent that runs, it's basically just a conversation over a long period of time. Unlike chatbots, where every time you log in, often you have to start from scratch, go, hey, who are you? And give me your details and so on. This remembers everything about you. And we'll say, last week you said this, how are you feeling now? And it's got like about 160 different points of diagnostics in there. And it's designed to help people understand when they're entering periods of psychological vulnerability sooner, and direct them to appropriate help before it hits crisis point. That's really what it's designed to do. So it's, smoothing out that demand curve for psychological support services. But that is essentially, that's an agent. That's what it's doing. Now, of course, there's lots of privacy in there, and, the organization can't see any of those, that wouldn't work, obviously. But what it's doing is it's learning about the person. It's learning, it's starting to build a psychological profile of who they are, understanding where their issues may be, where some anxieties may be, and starting to help that person deal with that on a day-to-day basis. And that's that, you know, without agentic AI, that would have never been possible to do.
Fantastic. So if I'm now thinking about it again, you know, as a medium business owner or leader, what area of AI application do you think is going to give me the most benefit in my business? Where do you think the quick runs on the board are going to be?
Yeah. So as I said before, I think those areas where you've got systems that are being underutilized. So as I was talking about before with sales guys in the CRM, for example, or you've got information that's difficult to capture or to be able to get value out of. So how are people accessing information? Those two areas tend to be the big cornerstones of value quite quickly inside the organization. There will be, without a doubt, there'll be some processes that absolutely could be automated. You know, so there'll be some reasonably mundane and basic processes that you could automate quite quickly. And they, you know, there will be, you know, some of the admin and support services probably within inside the organization. But what I would say to that is, so previous technology ways have been quite functional. So, you know, they've been like cloud, for example, is really about making IT more effective. And there's been, you know, technology ways around marketing, around finance, et cetera. AI is different in so much as that it is actually impacting every single knowledge worker, every single person who sits in front of a computer will be impacted by this technology. And so the biggest bang for buck, almost always for most organizations, is that piece, is how do we get our people going from aware and not really knowing what to do to we've got a unified approach and we're working together to learn on an agreed pathway, basically. So getting the organization as a whole started and moving in the same direction is without a doubt one of the best ways to get bang for buck.
Yeah. Simply actually harnessing the masses, even if they're only just starting out, getting them started out, giving them the tools to actually do it, giving them the encouragement to have a crack, make some mistakes, make some learnings, and share ideas.
Well, and probably what's going on with most organizations, I mean, we do the surveys, I find this almost always, is that there is a perception often by leaders that my organization, you know, our people won't like it, they'll be afraid, they'll be worried about, well, you know, what's going to take their jobs and all this sort of stuff. Almost always when we do the survey is that the organization is actually really, really excited about AI. They want to learn, they want to do more, they want to have a bigger impact on the business. And what they're looking for is direction and permission. And often what they're doing is, because they haven't got that, they're doing it sort of on the, you know, they're doing it secretly. You know, they're doing it and they're using their own tools and so on, which does create some risk. So I think that process of just saying, okay, this is here, it's going to impact our organization, it's going to impact our sector, let's get on the front foot and turn it into an advantage rather than a threat, and do that quickly and decisively is really going to give you a big bang for buck.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I was reminded of by one of the students that I work with at the universities at the moment in their final business degree years is, you know, when GPT became easily and readily available, all the universities clamped down on it and said, you know, you can't cheat, you can't use it. We're going to test to make sure that we can see whether or not you're getting GPT to write your essays for them. And fortunately, they've woken up to themselves that A, they can't win that battle, and B, they're missing an incredible opportunity. And I look at the fact that, what is it, 40-50% of our tertiary education market is students that come from a non-English speaking background, and how amazing it is to help somebody who has English as their second language for them to be able to actually do and prepare their work and their analysis, but actually use an incredibly competent English tool to actually help them write an essay or finesse an essay that actually is easy then for it to be marked and actually puts them on a level playing field with their peers. So rather than being penalized because they're from another country, now they're democratized again.
Yeah.
I think that's one of those amazing unintended consequences of these tools. And there are so many unintended consequences of AI. We're limited only by our imagination.
Yeah, there's a lot differently. A lot. I think there'll be some clearly unintended consequences, but a lot of very, very positive ones, I think.
Well, that leads us into a really important question, because I'm so tired of listening to the naysayers. So, Mark, what do you see as being the gotchas for our medium business starting to embrace AI and encouraging their staff to embrace it? What can go wrong?
So, I mean, having a policy is really, really important. So, and you know, it doesn't have to be overbaked, but I think having a policy. Remember the days when social media just started and every business got really confused about what it all meant, and then they started getting really surprised that all their staff were using social media, and eventually they had to get a policy and say, hey, you're allowed to do this, but you can't do this, and you know, don't talk about our business online, and just gave them some great, you know, gave them a framework to think about what was acceptable and what was unacceptable within the context of work. Well, that is kind of the same thing when it comes to AI. There's just a few more risks, obviously. You know, if you know, you don't want to be using, you know, even free models, if you set them up right, won't expose data, but you have to set them up right. So you've got to help people understand what that means and how to do that. If you're using a paid model internally, you know, there's a way to do the settings so none of the data that gets put in it is going to leak, or at least, you know, you can sort of mitigate that risk enormously. And then there's other ways of making sure, you know, you get increasingly secure as you're going up to more and more sort of sensitive information. So I think that that's a really good starting point.
So one issue is a security/privacy issue.
Yeah. So that's definitely one. I think the other one is, and you'll probably see a theme coming through here, is getting myopically focused on a short-term innovation opportunity. And then allowing the business to get disappointed if that one doesn't work. So as I said, if you have an automation mindset with AI, it may not deliver the business case you're expecting. But if you sort of take a slightly different route, you'll get much greater return on investment. So
give me a for instance about that.
For example, if you were saying what you want it to do is take every customer email and write a response in a certain way. And that's going to save us lots and lots of time. And then you realize that what it's doing is not actually responding in the way you want it. For example, it's quite an automation mindset. So it's just saying, this is a process or a project that is taking a lot of time, and we want to save money on that. We want to reduce the headcount on that. And you sit there and you do your business case and then you run it and you realize, actually, we need a human in the loop. Oh, yes, it is making it a bit more efficient, but nowhere near as efficient as we thought it could do. And as a result, the narrative in the organization goes, well, AI isn't working and it's not delivered the promise. And then that you allow that narrative to continue, which slows down the pace of, you know, the belief in the technology and the pace of the potential pace of change. So it's definitely something to avoid and think through the possibilities very, very quickly.
Whereas a smarter way to use that stream of customer inquiries would actually be to look at it from a data analytics perspective. Talk about, so what are the key things that we're learning from this, and what does that tell us about our customer service and our customer experience, and how can we actually improve on that, which ultimately may end up reducing the number of emails we get in the first place?
Absolutely. That's exactly it. So, you know, rather than, you know, think about the symptom, go back to the root cause and exactly. Absolutely.
And use a tool that's competent to look at a couple of thousand emails and actually find out what some of those root causes might be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that organizations that I've seen a lot is, and again, there's themes here, as organizations, you know, seeing the promise or the over promise often of the technology vendors. So, you know, like, so there's, you know, buy the technology, the licenses, you know, roll it out across the organization, go, well, that's going to deliver us 30% productivity improvement. Yay. And buy it all. And then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Now, was that a fault of the technology or was that a fault of change management?
Play the latter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's definitely a gotcha. That can cost a lot of money and create a lot of issues within inside the organization, because it'll, as I said, it'll, you know, there'll be change management issues, belief issues, it'll slow things down, it'll, you know, all of those kinds of things where, you know, just spending a little bit more time, we would have avoided all of that to start with. So those are definitely gotchas. And then also on the other side of it, just being overly confident about what it can do. You know, I mean, obviously there's, you know, we all know that AI can make stuff up from time to time. So if you're not helping your people understand that they have to develop deep knowledge about a topic so they can ask sensible and insightful questions of the tools and then have critical thoughts, so they're reviewing those with a really critical lens, then there's, you know, there's chances of things going wrong. But I think that's, you know, and it's, again, it's why I try and avoid the, you know, it will create efficiency gains and so on, but I try and avoid that language often, because if you're putting the pressure on the people to efficiency, they'll try and find ways to be faster and faster and faster. And there's a chance you could increase risk because the quality goes down. So, you know, how to manage those things as the business is learning to adopt the tools.
I think you also hit on a really important point, which was, you know, become adept at asking deep and intelligent questions, being adept at framing up your questions using the rich experience and understanding of a topic or a subject matter to help the AI really hone in on what it is that you're trying to get it to do. And then be diligent about interrogating the responses that it's come up with to ensure that it's reasonable. When you think about that, really what we're sort of saying is our knowledge workers or our people in the organization, if they're worried about their jobs becoming obsolete, yes, their repetitive, low-value transaction processing tasks will probably reduce dramatically. But actually, their importance to the organization, because they bring this thing called wisdom, which is the experience and the understanding and the ability to actually see what's not quite right, is actually where they're actually now adding a far higher value to a process which might be better, faster, cheaper.
Absolutely. Well, that's, I mean, it's a,
Which guarantees their job.
yeah. Well, I think that, yeah,
And
what you,
also allows them to get do all those things that they wanted to be able to do but couldn't because they never had the time. And it's a real value to the organization.
absolutely. I think
Value.
that's the key. I think that's the key is if you think about what is AI actually doing. So it's speeding up, you know, so it's giving the access to information for all sectors and all knowledge workers. It's speeding up the pace of change. You know, so all of those kind of environmental factors are at play. So what, how does an organization, so without thinking about AI or the technology piece, what does an organization need to do to be able to respond? The organization needs to be able to set itself up to be able to survive and thrive in that world, which means it's going to need to be able to be really efficient and also very agile, and needs to be able to respond to market dynamics and to a competitive and to a changing competitive landscape very quickly, and be able to have the insights and the ability to do that. AI gives you ability to be able to do element parts of your business really efficiently and really effectively. And so does automation allow you to do those things really, really effectively and efficiently. Your people give you the agility. The
Yes.
people give the ability to be able to shift and change, because, you know, AI, I mean, at the moment anyway, AI is not particularly good at dealing, you know, it's by definition, it's looking at data, it's looking at history and trying to map a pathway forward, but it's not able to navigate the future the way a human can. And I think, you know, that's the where the if you really want to create a highly competitive business, I'd say is, you know, there'll be probably, you know, 60% of your business that can be probably massively impacted by AI, and then you're allowed that big chunk of your business processes and impact to be able to be even more impactful by leveraging people in new ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mark, how do you help in this space for medium businesses?
So probably the best way to put that is a lot of what I do is that early stage guiding. So I help organizations understand their current state. So I've got a process for being able to map out where they are in terms of an AI maturity model. And it may be a little bit further along than they think once they understand the entirety of, you know, where their staff sits and so on, and then where they need to be. And, you know, well, you know, so say it's on a 5-step, you know, like maturity model. Most organizations don't need to be at level 5, but they might want to be at level 3 or 4, for example. So being able to help understand where they are and what's required to be able to get to that next leap along that journey. So I'd be able to map that out. Help enormously with, so the strategy to do that, the change management frameworks to be able to make that work, and the support and the training around that, and then bring in and help them adopt lots of the technologies. So help them go through the technology selection, work out how best to, you know, best to align that with internal capabilities, if they need to change KPIs. So that business strategy piece combined with the technology advisory piece to be able to make that actually work with inside their organization. And then, you know, hold their hand through that process to make sure that they're getting the return on investment.
Yeah, fantastic. So, Mark, if a medium business is wanting to get up to speed, are there any resources, courses, videos, prompt guides, assessments that you'd recommend that they have a look at to actually get them ready to have a conversation with someone like yourself?
Well, we've published a lot. So on our website, and I'll share that with you if you want to put this out. There's a lot of guides around prompting, case studies, a lot of articles around what it's going to do for goal, like internal goal measurement, and what AI, how AI can impact strategy, and so on. So there's, we've published a lot. There's also a lot of great podcasts out there. One called Me, Myself, and AI. I particularly like that, where it's looking at businesses around the world and how they've used AI. Now it's usually large enterprise businesses, but the stories and the way the stories are told and the process they went through to be able to have that impact, they're relevant for most organizations, because it's, you know, it's even though some of them were making big investments, that what they were doing was, you know, able to be adopted by anybody in business fundamentally. So I think that's, I think they're that's a really, really good resource as well. And then I think it's, I mean, it's pretty hard to avoid content when it comes to AI at the moment. It's kind of everywhere. It's really about finding the ones that resonate with you and your the way that you see the world.
Yeah, fantastic. If you really want to kick off your strategic planning and work in a supportive environment with other CEOs and leaders, the CEO Masterclass in Strategic Planning and Implementation is for you. This 10-month small group course helps you craft your strategic plan, present it to a group of peer investors, and develop a habit of monthly implementation. Our waitlist is open now at criticalfewactions.com.au. So, Mark, finally, if a founder or a CEO is looking to start utilising AI in their organisation, what critical few actions should they start tomorrow if they did nothing else?
So if it was a founder, I would be asking the question that most organizations never get the luxury of really being able to ask, which is, if we could design our business tomorrow with AI at its core, how would it look? Founders have the ability to be very agile and to be able to pivot often their business, depending on how old the business is and what sector it's in. But they have that ability that a lot of organizations don't do, and are able to actually think about, you know, if we could redesign this sector or this business with all the technology ability that we have now, how would it look? And it probably wouldn't look anything like the business does today. Many, many sectors, many, many businesses that you could say that absolutely, you know, if you had AI at the core, the way those businesses operate and the way those sectors operate would completely transform. If you're a CEO of an established business and is thinking about this, the question I would be asking is, how much do you think AI is going to impact your sector? And what does your organization need to look like to be able to survive and thrive in that new world? And my suspicion will always be that if you get, you know, smart people in the room and come up with some good ideas, you'll find a few use cases that will get you some incremental improvements. But if you take your organization through a change that, and give them the tools, you will find huge, huge, dramatic improvements and return on investment shifts. And I think those would be the things that I'd start to think about.
Fantastic. Mark Cameron, as always, it's been a delight to chat with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks, John. Absolutely my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Few Actions podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and grab the downloadables from the show notes. And if you found this episode helpful, I'd really appreciate it if you share it with your peers and your team. Stay focused and take action. The Critical Few Actions podcast, including show notes and links, provides general information only and is not individualised business advice, nor can it be relied upon as such. You must take responsibility for your own advice, decisions, and actions.